And I see there's some people here that weren't with us the first 3 days. How many persons are here that weren't here the first 3 days? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, okay. Okay, and how many of you don't know who is Krishna? Everyone knows who is Krishna. A little bit, who is Krishna? Okay. How many times have you been to this center here? Second time. Okay. Welcome. Hare Krishna. So that means you don't know who is Lord Chaitanya also, correct? How about your friend? Your friend is right next to you. New friend. Okay. Where's your old friend? She went away. Okay. Okay. So we're going to introduce you to Krishna. Yeah? Right behind you, there's a very large painting of Krishna. Actually, both of them are paintings of Krishna. All three of them are paintings of Krishna. You see something similar with all three of them? Cows. Krishna likes cows. Translate that into Chinese. So, the name Krishna means the all-attractive. There's another name of Krishna. Another name of Krishna is Govinda. And that means he gives pleasure to the moo cows. And he gives pleasure to the senses. And then another name of Krishna is Gopal. He gives protection to the cows. And Krishna has an eternal spiritual realm or abode, residence. And that's in the spiritual world. And the spiritual world is far, far beyond this material world. The realm of Krishna, the abode of Krishna is in the vastness of the spiritual sky. That spiritual sky is unlimited. And all of the unlimited spiritual sky, as well as this place, the material realm, they are emanations from the energetic source of Krishna.
And
speaking to her. You can stay there. It's okay. I just want eye contact. Okay. I just want to see. And so Krishna is the source of everything, spiritual and material. That's Krishna. We gave a little example yesterday. Supposing you take a candle, and then from an original candle you light so many other candles and it fills the room. And at night you enter the room filled with candles. And it looks very nice. And each candle is as luminous as all of the other candles. But from one candle, all the other candles are lit. Krishna is like the original candle. Everything in this world and everything in the spiritual world emanate from Krishna. From time to time, Krishna personally descends into this material creation. He shows his form. He performs wonderful activities. He gives wonderful teachings. He exhibits a kind of love that is beyond anything worldly. And his purpose is to attract the hearts and the minds of those living entities here who have forgotten him back to the spiritual world. Sometimes he sends expansions of himself called avatars to come into this realm to represent him. Lord Buddha is one of those avatars. This is told in the scriptures that were written 5,000 years ago. A few thousand years before Buddha would come, it was told he would come. And details about his life are explained there. Sometime later, Lord Chaitanya appeared. And his picture is right here behind me. Lord Chaitanya taught the means of achieving love for Krishna is by singing and praising his holy name. Lord Chaitanya also gave some teachings. And those teachings were written down by his followers. Several centuries after Lord Chaitanya, several centuries after Lord Chaitanya appeared, a very great personality came into this world. And he explained in simple language these very elevated teachings. And my presentation is to discuss one of those books. And very skinny.
啊, 是很薄的一本书,
but it's very heavy.
但是呢,
because it's very full of knowledge. So, the first day, I gave a biographical presentation of the life of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And the second day, we began the book. And in the first chapter, the main message is answering the question, how does devotion to Krishna begin? After looking at different possibilities that some people say this and some people say that, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes that bhakti begins in one's life when one receives devotion for Krishna or bhakti from one who has bhakti. So that includes all of us. Just like you, although you're just associating with devotees for the second time. Somewhere, someone who had bhakti in their bhakti vessel called the heart, and because they were very kind, they very politely spilled some bhakti on you. And then you receive some bhakti from them. And so you're here. Hare Krishna. And same for all of us. So that's chapter one. How does bhakti begin? Bhakti creates bhakti. We can't get bhakti through any material cause. But only from one who has bhakti. So now a little summary of chapter 2. Chapter 2 had four parts. The first part was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur summarizing the essence verse of the whole Nectar of Devotion. That is a definition of what bhakti is that we've received. Bhakti is a very singularly focused attention upon pleasing Krishna. Bhakti has the effect of changing our iron-like heart into gold. And lifting our consciousness to the platform where there is indifference towards other things and a total dedication to trying to please Krishna somehow.
So,
The second part of chapter 2. There was a description of sadhana bhakti, or the beginning of the three stages of bhakti. I explained that there are three main subject matters in Nectar of Devotion. The first of those three divisions of subject matter is devotional service and practice. There are two kinds of practice. One is spontaneous and the other is regulative. We're primarily engaged in regulative devotional practice. So those two parts are defining our subject matter. The third part of chapter 2 was describing the original sprouting of the seed of bhakti that opens into two leaves that unfurl. It's a very nice metaphor. And in that metaphor, one of the leaves of the creeper of bhakti is that which destroys or eliminates the suffering of the living entity in this material world.
Good.
And the second leaf is that which awakens auspiciousness in the life of the devotee. We discussed that the auspiciousness is transcendental kind of auspiciousness, because there are different kinds. And then the fourth part of chapter 2 described the first three stages of bhakti's development. Preliminary faith. That was the first stage. And then association with saintly persons, sadhu sangha. And then the third stage is what you do when you're in the association of saintly persons. You perform devotional practices. And there's two kinds of regulative practices. Some are according to the rules and regulations of the beginning stages of devotion. And there are practices in the ecstatic and spontaneous stage of devotion. And we ended chapter 2. So that's a little summary of what took us about 9 hours. including all the questions and answers and discussion. So now we're ready for chapter 3. I'll remind you of the meaning of the title of the book, Madhurya Kadambini. Literally, it's translated as the cloud bank of nectar. Normally, clouds in the sky is just water vapor. And when it rains water. Bhakti has different kinds of clouds. They're made of nectar. And when it rains, it's a shower of nectar. So this is the third shower of nectar. So the chapter 3 is a very important chapter for all of us as practicing devotees. I say that because we've already, to some degree, greater or lesser degree, we're all accomplished the first three stages. We're now working on this one, the fourth one. The first subject matter that's covered is a definition of what is anartha. In Sanskrit, this word artha means something wanted. And, well, we've got to show it in Sanskrit. Chinese. This word, anartha, means not wanted. And this word, nivritti, I guess that's somewhere in here. Nivritti means eradication or removal. So the fourth stage of bhakti is removing unwanted things from our heart. Bhakti has that kind of power. It's like a television commercial about a cleansing agent, power more powerful than dirt. Within the heart are so many dirty things, unwanted things. And these things have not just developed in this one lifetime. Many, many lifetimes, we have a big storeroom of unwanted things. And anartha nivritti stage is clearing away or cleansing those unwanted things. So that's the topic of chapter 3. The first question that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur addresses . Where do these anarthas come from? How did they get there? And his answer is that they can be analyzed according to their source of emanation.
Emanation.
Yeah?
也就是从它展示的方式，我们展示的方式的源头，可以去追究那些污垢是哪里来的。
The first category is very easy to understand.
对，第一个就是层面呢，是很容易理解的。
Unwanted things enter the heart, arising from past sinful activities.
也就是说，这些我们不想要的东西呢，它是来自于过往的罪恶活动。
Here's some good news. Bhakti is very powerful. And especially the chanting of the holy name is especially powerful. According to Srimad Bhagavatam and our devotional teachings, the chanting of the holy name can eradicate all the sinful reactions accumulated for many, many lifetes.
根据圣解佛教法，以及我们所有其他的经典呢，它告诉我们，吟诵圣名呢，可以把我们很多很多生生世世积累下来的所有这些垃圾和污垢完全的清除。
The holy name is so powerful.
圣名是那么有力量。
The next source of unwanted things in the heart is for our past pious activities.
那么下一个，我们不想要的这些垃圾的这个源头，来自于我们过往的前尘活动。
That's a little more difficult to understand.
这对我们来说呢，有一点要去理解的话，不那么容易。
Let me explain.
那我来解释一下。
In addition to bad things, we've also done some pious things.
那么，除了我们会去做一些不好的事情之外呢，我们还会做一些好事。
What is the fruit of pious activity?
所以呢，对于这些虔诚活动或者善事，他们会给我们带来什么样的结果呢？
One of the fruits of pious activity is prosperity.
虔诚活动的结果之一就是繁荣。
So supposing you're a very prosperous person.
比如说，你是一个非常就是富有的人或者繁荣。
Because in the past you've done many pious things. But supposing your heart isn't pure yet.
假设你的心没有完全的洁净，没有完全的洁净。Then
you can be absorbed in trying to enjoy the fruits of your past pious activities.
然后呢，你就会去沉醉于去享受你过往的虔诚活动所带来的这些结果。
That kind of activity or intention in life takes one away from Krishna.
那么像这样一种倾向呢，会把人带离Krishna。
But if you chant Hare Krishna,
但是如果你吟诵Hare Krishna,
then the heart can become pure.
然后我们的心就会变得纯粹。
And the fruits of your past pious activity simply becomes a facility to offer to Krishna.
然后呢，你过往虔诚活动的这些结果，那么就可以去用于对 Krishna 的服务了。
Remember, we're discussing this Anartha Nivritti topic.
记得我们现在在讨论的主题呢是 Anartha Nivritti 清除污垢。
How to free ourselves from unwanted things within the heart.
也就是说，如何让我们内心的这些肮脏的污垢呢，或者不想要的东西，把它去除掉。
So the first two are now explained.
所以呢，我们现在阐释了两种源头。
And here comes the third one.
然后呢，现在是第三种。
There are impurities in the heart that arise from offenses.
就是在我们内心有一种不洁呢，是来自于冒犯的。
And our main attention in this chapter and in this stage of our spiritual practice is going to go to number three.
而我们很主要的、很重要的，就是说，这样一个阶段呢，就是要去攻克第三个，就是来自冒犯的这些不洁或者不想要的东西。
There are different categories or types of offenses. One of those types of offenses is offenses in deity worship. For those of you that have read Nectar of Devotion, you know that there are 64 items of seva aparad or offenses to be avoided in deity worship. That's a long list. Even if one is very careful, you may make one mistake or another mistake. Unintentionally, that may happen. Therefore, there's the chanting of the holy name. Because the chanting of the holy name clears away all those seva aparads or reactions that come from mistakes in worshipping the deity. But then there's the chanting of the holy name and offenses we may commit when chanting the holy name. So that's where our attention is going to go in this stage of our devotional practice and in this chapter. So it's very important. Supposing one becomes pretty accomplished, pretty successful at chanting without offenses. At some stage, one may become a little successful in devotional practice. Better watch out. Because there's another anartha source that comes from bhakti successfully performed. We discussed this briefly the other day. Supposing someone arranges a very nice Janmashtami festival. And the devotees come and say, "Oh, you did such a nice job arranging the Janmashtami festival." One is getting some praise and some honor for successful devotional service. One may be the enjoyer of that little success in devotional service and try to, "Yes, I'm having a good time doing nice devotional service because people are praising me." The term that we discussed yesterday was taranga rangani. If you remember that one? Ranga means waves. Rangani is diminutive or small waves.
那么, rangani 便意思,
And taranga means enjoying the small waves of my successes in devotional service. You receive some praise or some honor or some distinction. And then you think of yourself as the enjoyer of that. After all, I worked very hard for the Janmashtami festival. I deserve some praise. Or maybe someone will feel hurt. No one said anything. I worked so hard. Nobody appreciates me. You get the idea. That's an impurity of heart. Bhakti is very powerful. And if one stays focused, like the definition that we heard in the beginning of the previous chapter, like the bee that is simply interested in honey, the devotee following Rupa Goswami's teachings is simply interested in cultivating activities that bring happiness to Krishna. So attention doesn't go to the praise or the absence of praise. That's the higher stage of devotion. Because we're all human after all. We like to appreciate others and have others appreciate the sacrifices we make. It's just human. But as the stages of bhakti become higher and more matured, socially, politely, one genuinely praises and appreciates other devotees, but their attention is the happiness of Krishna. So now we're going to go through this list of four one more time. And we'll start with the sinful activities part, this one. Here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti says. There are unwanted things in the heart that arise from sinful activities. They manifest as kleshas or sufferings. And if you can remember as far back as 24 hours ago, there were five kinds of kleshas. Remember that list? Avidya, Asmita, Raga, Dvesha, Abhinivesh. Remember that list? Now I'll say it slower in English. The first one was ignorance of one's identity. The second one was falsely accepting a wrong identity or false ego. And then hatred and attachment, raga and dvesha. And the fifth one was just a pervasive sense of being an enjoyer of things temporary. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is writing that these reactions due to past sinful activities are unwanted things due to past sinful activities. They're eradicated through the chanting of the holy name. Okay, now we're going to go to number two. Impurities that arise from past pious activities. There's a strong affinity or addiction to enjoying the results of past piety. That's a tendency. Those that are situated in the quality of goodness, they may become attached to enjoying the way mode of goodness people enjoy things. The focus here now is me, 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 not Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And I'm the kind of person that likes mode of goodness enjoyment. And one of the things I like about myself is I'm very kind to other people. I'm very charitable. I derive happiness from being kind to other people. Just see how kind I am. I have, and some other people don't have, but I'm very generous. I give to them from what I have. Now, I'm exaggerating, of course. But it gives you an idea. It's described in Bhagavad Gita, the happiness and the mode of goodness. One becomes conditioned by that happiness and the mode of goodness, thinking, ah, I'm a good person. And we all know what that feeling is. When we do things that are a purposeful act of kindness for another, we feel something. It's a mode of goodness, happiness. It feels good. And we like to feel good. Again, the problem is I'm at the center. Krishna just somehow disappeared. So that's an unwanted condition of heart according to the teachings of pure devotion. Here's another one. Sometimes this goes even higher into hankering for liberation. I'm such a mode of goodness person that I'd like to go beyond material existence altogether. One may also lose sight of Krishna in that condition. But the happiness of bhakti is so much greater that that becomes diminished in its importance for a practicing devotee. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that some great acharyas include even this pious activity thing as one of the kleshas. It's a suffering condition, actually. Here, here is why it is considered a suffering. Listen carefully. The real happiness of the self or the soul is missing. What's the real happiness? The happiness of a loving exchange with the supreme lovable person, Krishna. That's actual suffering. Okay, so now we're ready for the third of these sources of unwanted things of the heart. Unwanted things in the heart may arise from offenses. In a general category, Vishwanath says they're called nam aparad. Then he clarifies this point. Devotional service begins with hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting about Krishna. And from the hearing and chanting about Krishna, other forms or expressions or limbs of bhakti may manifest. And each one of the limbs of bhakti can eradicate impurities of the heart. But the holy name is the original and most important one, and therefore Namaparad is identified. I already mentioned Sevaparad, or service to the deity. Here's a detail. An important detail. One should not think, well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, so it doesn't matter if I make some offenses in deity worship, because I'll just chant Hare Krishna, everything will be made clean. Then that seva parad becomes nama parad. So that's what this part means, only when deliberately done. When we know what offenses are to be avoided and we do them anyway, this makes an impurity arise within the heart. The solution is, we should be very careful when we're performing deity worship or serving the devotees in some way. If there's something unintentional, some mistake that's made, the chanting of the holy name then removes that impurity of the heart. There's a long section in this chapter dedicated to explain this point on the board here. He gives a lot of scriptural reference to explain. Here's the simple point. Somebody is a very genuinely sincere devotee. And they know what the standards of devotion are because they've carefully heard and studied the scripture. In the enthusiasm of their striving to achieve and move towards the goal of the bhakti, some detail may be neglected in the execution of devotional practice. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that does not result in some impurity of the heart. I'll give one example that he refers to. He points to one verse in the 11th canto, chapter 2, Srimad Bhagavatam. And the verse is describing a young devotee who, in his enthusiasm to please Krishna, with such strong faith, he closes his eyes and just begins to run toward Krishna. So he takes that Sanskrit phrase that says, close the eyes and run, and explains, in such a circumstance, there's no offense. But it's built upon the one that's before it, this Sevaparad message. This particular point is an embellishment of the previous point. What's not okay is, I'm the pujari, I'm in an ecstatic mood, I'll just forget the deity and do something else instead because I want to chant extra rounds. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said it's okay. It's not okay.
Not okay.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, 这是不行的.
But there are examples for elevated devotees that may neglect something in favor of a higher principle they're pursuing, and there's not an offense for that. Now we're on to the fourth one. And we already discussed this twice. There may be impurities in the heart that arise from devotional service nicely performed. One may be given some wealth or some worship or respect or position. We are not to be the enjoyers of those things, but they're meant exclusively for Krishna service. That's all. Okay, that's the first section of chapter
3.
And we're more than halfway done. The next section of chapter 3, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is going to cover some of the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name. That's this one up here. So here we are. What are the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name? He's going to cover just a few. And he says the first one on that list of 10 is the most vicious. And that's offenses against the devotee of the Lord. Done with animosity. Animosity. You have the word here? Okay. That means, he says, it includes speaking against a devotee. It can mean doing something with a feeling of negativity or animosity towards another devotee. And even stronger, you wish to hurt that person. And this is a very, very serious offense. Now, we don't want to do things like that, but in our contaminated and conditioned existence, sometimes those things happen.
在这样一种受污染的状态、受条件限制的状态下的时候，有时候我们的确会这样做出这样的事情。
So what to do?
那怎么办呢？
When something like that happens,
当有一些这样的事情发生的时候，该怎么办呢？
He proposes a remedy.You go and approach that same sadhu and you take shelter of them. Now, what's the meaning of sadhu? Sometimes we think of sadhu as a renunciate, a monk.Vishwanath explains that a sadhu is any devotee. Not just a pure devotee, but any devotee, even if they have some quality of bad behavior. Now, how do we understand that? Let's step back for a moment and think of who the living being really is. With a spiritual conception, what's the living being? We know from our Bhagavad Gita teaching.A living being is a tiny, fragmental spark, part of Krishna. And amongst countless numbers of living entities within this material world, some are carrying bhakti in their heart.They may not be very advanced in devotion. But if they're carrying bhakti in their heart, then they're a bhakta. So respect should go to the bhakti that's within their heart and the soul that's carrying bhakti within their heart.Bad behavior is still bad behavior. Improper speech is still improper speech. Something that is bad may be considered bad, but the soul is to be considered or regarded with respect.This is a big topic in spiritual life. Separating the soul from the covering of the soul. The coverings of the soul may be contaminated. But bhakti is very rare and precious.I'll give two little examples. One comes from Prabhupada's life. One woman wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada. Dear Swamiji, you're wonderful. You have done wonderful things. Your writings and your teachings are wonderful.It's very clear to me that the gift that you're giving is very sublime and transcendental. Following the praise, she came out with what her problem was. But my feelings are very hurt because some of your followers, they don't exemplify your teachings. They don't represent you properly. Even sometimes they do bad things. And so I wish that you could do something about that. And then she ended the letter with again some praise. So Prabhupada wrote a reply. My dear madam, thank you very much for your kind words. If there's anything wonderful that I have done, it's by the grace of my Guru Maharaj, it's by his effort and benediction, something has happened. As far as my followers are concerned, please forgive them. Consider them to be like a person who knows that they're not clean. They're going to the shower to make themselves clean. So do not fault them for being not clean yet. Kindly encourage and assist them to become clean and follow very nicely so they will represent the teachings properly. Prabhupada, by that letter, was teaching us how we should see when a devotee does something that's not proper. Something that's not proper is not proper. It doesn't make it okay because they're a devotee. But we shouldn't speak something bad about the person. We should try to be in the mood of serving the person so they can overcome that shortcoming. So now let's go through a step-by-step process of what you should do when it comes to your attention that you've offended a devotee. Could I see a show of hands of persons who sometime during their devotional life know they did something that was hurtful and offended another devotee? Let's be honest. It's only natural because we're fallible beings. What do you do when it comes to your consciousness that you did something that hurt another person, another devotee? Here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. You go to that very person, submit your statement of the wrong that you have done, and request that person to excuse you or forgive you for the wrong that you have done. Because they're Vaishnavas, commonly they'll say, very well, everything is forgiven. He then explains, supposing they're very upset and they don't right away forgive you, then what do you do? He says, then you go back once again, a little later, and you submit again your apology and ask for forgiveness. Supposing they're still very upset, they don't forgive you. What you do then? After some time, you go back and submit your apology again. In other words, you really mean it. You're sincere. You would like their kindly forgiving you for that wrong thing that happened. Maybe they feel so hurt, they still don't give you forgiveness. What to do? In your heart, you hold regard of apology towards that person and chant the holy name, hoping that the holy name will help soften their heart and they'll forgive you. Supposing that you think, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur advises some things not to do. You might think, oh, they're such an advanced devotee. This is such a small thing. Surely they are not even bothered by it. Surely they have already forgiven, so I don't have to go apologize. He says, don't think like that. Because even if that exalted devotee has forgiven you, the dust of the lotus feet may not have forgiven you. And therefore taking shelter at their lotus feet is necessary. Here's another thing that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur advises against. And this goes on all the time. It even goes on within families. Listen carefully, I'm sure you'll see it. The husband is a devotee, the wife is a devotee. The husband or the wife does something that's not nice. And they think, well, they've done so many bad things, so many wrong things, so many things that have hurt me, I'm not going to apologize. Those of you that are married, you're married to a devotee. At least I hope you're married to a devotee. And these rules apply, even though you're very closely associating as husband and wife. Or would take it out of the household situation and just in the community. I may speak something harshly to another devotee. And my mind is justified because look at all the faults that person has. Of course they speak harshly to them. Pointing out the defects in another doesn't make justification for offending them. Offense is not minimized because another person has some fault or defect. And by the way, a remedy isn't just don't associate with devotees because you might make some offense. Just stay away from devotees and you won't make any offenses. I know some people who think like that. But that's not a solution either. Here's the solution. We respect within the heart of everyone who's assembled here. They're carrying some bhakti in their heart. So my respect goes to them as a spirit soul first. Just like the ant crawling across the floor, there's another spirit soul, but he doesn't have bhakti in his heart yet. So, but these devotees, they have bhakti in their heart. So my respect goes to that soul with bhakti in their heart. And from that position of respect, let me learn how I can associate with different qualities of devotees. While respecting them, trying to serve them in an appropriate way. That's the right spirit. Okay, we're nearly done. Here are some of the other offenses that he mentions. The second offense is considering the demigods to be equal to Krishna. Some of our new people don't know what demigods are. So listen carefully, I'm going to explain. Remember I described before who Krishna is? Yeah? I'm speaking to you. Yeah. Yeah, back there. So, he is in the spiritual world. We're down here somewhere in the cloud of the material energy. And there are administrators that are looking after the affairs of the universe. Someone's in charge of the water. Someone's in charge of light. Some is in charge of the rain. Some is in charge of the wind, etc. Administrators that are looking after the creation. They do that on behalf of Krishna. They're very elevated. And if I considered those elevated administrators to be equal to Krishna, that's a mistake. Okay, then he explains there are different categories of living entities that are not equal to Krishna. One of those categories is us. Tiny living entities called jiva soul. And there's two types. Some that have material covering. That's us, by the way. And some that don't have any material covering. They're liberated. A living entity that's liberated is not equal to Krishna. It's an offense to consider a living entity to be God. And then those that are liberated are in two categories. Those of you that have been around for a while, you know these terms. In the vastness of the spiritual sky, there's innumerable spiritual planets. Some of those planets are called Vaikuntha planets, or filled with opulences. And some of the persons residing there, they're very attracted to the opulences of Vaikuntha. And some living entities in this vastness of the spiritual sky, they're with Krishna. And they're so attracted to the opulent, to the sweetness of Krishna, they don't even notice his opulences. We should not think of those persons equal to Krishna in all respects. That's all he's saying. Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and the wonderful cowherd boys and the gopis. They're, and all these nice cows. They're not equal to Krishna. They love Krishna, and Krishna loves them. But liberated souls are not equal to Krishna. And there's a long section discussing Lord Shiva. And I'm not going to spend much time on it. It's a long, very, very intricate section. I invite you to read it when it's translated in Chinese.
Because
Shiva is a very amazing personality that's in his own category. But he's not Krishna. To equate Krishna and Lord Shiva, or Lord Brahma and Lord Krishna, this is an offense. We respect them. We respect them appropriately to their position. But they're not equal to Krishna. So that's that one. He skips third offense and goes to the fourth offense. By the way, all of this is discussed in Nectar of Devotion. He's just giving us like a little churning the topic kind of discussion about offenses. We should not disrespect the Vedas. Do you know what are the Vedas? The Vedas are the spiritual teachings that tell us all about Krishna. The Vedas are likened to the mother. In this way, your mother can tell you who your father is. She knows. But before you were born, you don't know who your father was, but your mother knows. Your mother can identify, this is your father. Similarly, the Vedas disclose, here is the source of everything, Krishna. But some part of the Vedas, to help people in the very beginning stages of their spiritual awakening, the Vedas teach about rituals that are helping to elevate one in material prosperity. It's called the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. Some of you know that. So because a big part of the Vedas don't even speak about bhakti, in fact they teach people how to get things in this material world properly according to the codes of the Vedas. One may disrespect them. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, don't make that mistake. Rather, you should look at the big picture. That portion of the Vedas is there for people who won't surrender to Krishna, but they want material elevation. So Krishna is very kind. He connects them to him indirectly. He connects those people to him indirectly. So, there's a purpose for that portion of the Vedas. How do we counteract this offense? Praise the Vedas. And praise those who practice and teach the Vedas. Like we find in Canto 1, Srimad Bhagavatam. There's strong emphasis in uplifting Brahminical culture or respecting Brahminical culture. Okay, and almost at the very end, there's this nice chart. Which explains what's important is right here, this section right here. There are anarthas that arise from sins, aparad, and devotion itself. And those impurities aren't removed until you begin devotional practice. And this list says it's they're absolutely removed in the stage of attachment of to Krishna. And everything is perfect in this column up to the stage of great taste in devotional practice. Here's the message is watch out for offenses against the holy name. Because impurities of the heart that arise from offenses against the chanting of the holy name are not eradicated completely until one reaches the stage of love of God. I'll repeat. Chant without offense. Because that's the most important way to remove impurities of heart. And now comes the embellishment at the end. Actually, the chapter is done. The rest is Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's ecstasy. Somebody may have the following doubt. Hearing what we just said, someone may have the following doubt. How is it possible for one who chants the holy name like a Jamila did to still have some remaining impurities of the heart? Here's the answer he provides. The devotee that offends another devotee Nama Prabhu, the holy name personified, may not forgive that person. He says like this, the sound may be there, but Nama Prabhu may not be there. For that reason, the Yamadutas, they were powerless. Only the devotee himself, by approaching another who one has offended, can relieve himself from the reaction. That's the message. All of this is discussing the gravity of offending a devotee. He then asks another question. Supposing someone attains the lotus feet of Krishna, is it possible for impurities to arise in the heart even after that stage? From the answer he provides is, there's the story in the sixth canto about King Chitraketu.
Here.
Apparently, an accidental offense was made by Chitraketu against Lord Shiva. It's a long story, and I don't think we have time to go into the long story. If somebody asks me, I'll tell you the long story. If someone asks, I'll narrate the long story. But some of you are looking tired. So I don't want to put you to sleep. Some of you are already asleep. Maybe the story will wake some people up, I don't know. I guess I better tell the story now I started. You'll find this description in Canto 6. There was a very pious king. And he was actually a devotee. And he was such a good king that all of the citizens in his kingdom were very happy. Because he was so pious, the citizens were also prospering. The Vedas, these books that teach about Krishna, the Vedas teach that if the king is very pious, the citizens also benefit from his piety. So everyone is very happy. Except for one problem. There's always a problem. Do you know of any situation where there's no problem? There's always a problem. So here was King Chitraketu's problem. He didn't have a son. And it's part of the duty of a king to produce a son so the king can become the next, that son can become the next king. So he married a second queen. The second queen had no son also. So he married a third queen. No son. The number kept growing and growing and growing.
And
Do you know how many queens he had? He had more queens than Krishna had. Queens. That's a lot of queens. You would have thought he would have gotten the message. It's not meant to happen. He should have understood the message. It's not meant to happen. But he was attached. So more and more queens and still no son. One fine day, a great sage named Angira Muni visited his palace. And because the king was very pious, he knew how to receive him properly. And it's a very nice reception, suited for an elevated saintly person like Narada. I mean Angira. As soon as Angira entered the palace, he could immediately understand the whole situation. So he politely asked the king, "How is everything in your kingdom going?" I see in your face there's some disturbance. Is there some rebellion in the kingdom, or is your treasury very poor, or your army not cooperating? What is the difficulty? King Chitraketu said, "Please help me, I don't have a son." "You're a great sage, surely you must know something. How do I can have a son? Please help me, please help me." Angira can understand this man is too attached. I could give him transcendental knowledge, but he won't be able to hear it. So he had a second plan. He said, "Very well, I know some special procedures, mantras that I can perform, and you can have a son." "But I'll tell you in advance, the son will be both the source of happiness and misery. Like anything else in the material world. In fact, I'll give him a name right now. His name will be Harsha Shoka. That means happiness, distress. That was his name. And the king thought, maybe my son will be a little disobedient. Maybe he'll give me some trouble like that. Better have that kind of son than no son. So yes, I accept." So Angira performed the ritual. A very special beverage was created that he gave to his first wife, Krishna Jyoti. And she accepted that beverage, drank the beverage. After some time, she conceived a son. And now everyone was happy. The king now finally has a son. And the king spent so much time and attention and affection with his first wife. He neglected all of the other queens. So everyone was happy except for the 99,999
other queens.
They started getting envious. She's getting all the attention. The king doesn't care about us anymore. And they started speaking privately. And their envy reached such a degree that they decided to kill the child. So they made a plan. At night, they administered poison to the child. And he died. In the morning, the queen went first thing to see her sleeping son. And he was lying there in his baby bed. And she began singing nice songs and trying to wake him, but he didn't wake him. His eyes stayed closed. And then she touched his body and it was cold. She realized he was dead. She screamed. She screamed. And the king heard her screaming. And he came running. He feared the worst. He fell over his royal robes and fell to the ground and got up and started running again and running and running. And when he reached the baby crib, he saw his wife sprawled on the ground crying, and he saw, "My son is dead," and he fell to the ground and fainted. Just then, Angira Muni and Narada Muni came right there, right at the right time. The king was crying and crying. And then Angira and Narada gave him transcendental knowledge. Before, he couldn't hear transcendental knowledge because of very profound, deep attachment. Now that that attachment was smashed, now he could hear. So they gave transcendental knowledge. And they spoke many transcendental things about the eternal nature of the soul and the temporary nature of the body. And after hearing this very long section of the Bhagavatam about transcendental knowledge, Angira stopped crying finally. Achitraketu stopped crying.
国王他听了很多有关于佛家法坛里面非常长的篇幅的这些关于超然啊超然的灵性知识这个话题之后呢，终于国王停止了哭泣。
And he asked, who are you? Who are both of you?
他就问说，你们俩到底是谁呀？
Angira said,You're so deluded, you don't even remember. I was the one who arranged for the sun. This is the nature of attachment. You can't see anything properly. So they continued with their teaching and transcendental knowledge.And then Narada began explaining about devotional service or bhakti. And Narada advised the king to develop devotion in his life instead of material attachment.And then a very amazing thing happened. Narada spoke to the dead boy.
He
said, My dear boy, just see how your mother and father are lamenting now that you have gone. Be kind upon them and come back.So he came back. And he sat up in his little bed. But he was only speaking to Narada. He said, Why have you brought me back here? You said that my mother and father are missing me very much.But who is my real mother and father? In my previous lifetime, in this other little body, they were my mother and father. Before them, I had other mother and father, and before them, another mother and father, and before them, another mother and father. So who's my mother and father? In fact, I was just with my eternal father.And you called me away. I want to go back to him. See you later. You said it already. Okay. And he laid back down. Chitraketu got the message.What's really important is the soul. And the soul's relationship with our eternal Father. So Narada gave him some practices to perform in devotion. And King Chitraketu, right then, he just left the palace.And following the instructions of Narada, he practiced bhakti in a very, very sincere and dedicated way. His practices were so strong. Then in that very lifetime, he ascended to the heavenly realm where the demigods live.And he was continuing there, just not interested in heavenly pleasures, just in practicing devotion to Krishna, to become fixed in devotion to Krishna. And he attained that stage that's described up here. He attained the lotus feet of the Lord. He became so advanced that he was on an equal level of devotion with Lord Shiva. In fact, he and Lord Shiva were friends. Imagine how elevated he became. So one time he went to visit Lord Shiva. And he was riding on his, it's called a vimana, a plane that would fly in the air and travel from planet to planet. And he was circling around, coming in for a landing. And he looked over the side of the plane. And he saw Lord Shiva with Parvati, his consort, seated on his lap. So he made some remark. Hey, Lord Shiva, what are you doing? You got Parvati on your lap here. He didn't say it exactly like that. He was appreciating that Lord Shiva is so advanced that he remains undisturbed even in such intimate contact with his wife. He's not an ordinary person at all. That was the intention behind his word. It was praise of Lord Shiva's quality. Parvati took it the opposite. She took it that Chitraketu was criticizing her husband. So when Chitraketu came before Lord Shiva, Parvati spoke very strongly. You're a big offender. You don't know the qualification of my husband, Lord Shiva. You think he's an ordinary person. And that's because you have such mundane, demoniac mentality. So I curse you, you become a demon. What did King Chitraketu do? He folded his palms and said, my dear mother, actually I was praising your husband, not speaking badly against him at all. But behind your words there must be some plan of the Lord. So I accept the plan of the Lord and offer you all my respect. He then circumambulated Parvati three times to show her respect. He got back on his vimana, his plane. He returned to his heavenly planet. And very shortly, he left that heavenly planet and became a demon. And in his demon body, he was known as Vritrasura. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is writing in this Madhurya Kadambini. That Chitraketu actually didn't incur an offense. It was an apparent offense, not a real offense. And therefore his high level of Krishna prema was retained. Retained, kept. Even he was in the body of a demon, he had love of God. And there's a whole three chapters that describe about Vritrasura in his super elevated consciousness, Krishna consciousness. And the last part down here has to do with another pastime from Srimad Bhagavatam. Those of you that are familiar with Lord Nrisimhadev, you know the pastime of the cursing of giant Vijay to become Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. I could take some time and explain that nice story. I'll make it really short. Really short. The four Kumaras, who were sons of Lord Brahma, went to Vaikuntha. They weren't allowed to enter Vaikuntha. The gatekeepers of giant Vijay stopped them. The Kumaras became a little angry. And they said, "You don't belong here in Vaikuntha. You have this mentality of friends and enemies. And that doesn't exist in Vaikuntha. You belong in the material world." So we'll give you a choice. Three births as demons or four births as devotees, then you can come back. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that previously Jayan Vijay had offered a prayer. They were very intimate associates of the Lord of Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So they knew their master's feelings and moods very well. And Lord Narayan sometimes likes a little tussle, little, like, you know, wrestling and little Kshatriya spirit. But who in Vaikuntha is going to do that for him? So they offered a prayer. Our dear Lord Narayan, if you so desire, we can do that service for you. But for that to happen, you have to forget your affection for your devotee. And we're your devotees. So if you like, you can make an arrangement so we can be the opposition party. Kindly fulfill our prayer. So Lord Narayan fulfilled their prayer. They could take up a situation where they could be fighting against the personality of Godhead. Although they were the Lord's devotee. In other words, these are examples of extraordinary circumstances. They're not ordinary. That's his point. This relishing topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he presents the verse from Nectar of Devotion, that's the stages of bhakti. We saw this just in the English version, the nine stages of bhakti. And you've been sitting here a very long time. I think I'll cover these next slides tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Thank you for being so patient. You know, you've been here for, my goodness, 2 hours and 15 minutes. Wow. Congratulations, all of you. And it looks like everybody's awake now. I think you like stories. I think you also like questions and answers, so let's do some of that. Any comments or questions?
Maharaj. Yeah, I had a question I wanted to know about. When Mother Durga curses Chitrakesu to become a demon, because it's not really an offense.
Yes.
So does
she get any reaction?
Well, the answer is right here, in a way. I've simply copied what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said. It was an apparent offense, not a real offense. So his prema was not covered. When there is an offense, our devotion becomes covered. That's the nature of offense. It's just the real self becomes covered. So the bodily change was made. But Chitraketu accepted, somehow that's the plan of the Lord, and that's fine with me. So one could make an argument and say, well, there was some reaction, because look, he got this demon body. And one can make another argument and say, well, his prema wasn't lost, and so whether it's this body, that body, or some other body, it's irrelevant for a devotee.
So, 所以对他来说是就是说是没有什么不一样的，他仍然拥有他的 prima。 所以
And that's what Lord Shiva said after Chitraketu left.
这就是主师的在 Chitraketu 离开之后所说的。
Lord Shiva said to Parvati,
主师的对 Parvati 说，
It is not he who made an offense, it's you who made an offense. He didn't do anything wrong, but you did. In fact, just see the nature of this person. And then he spoke that famous verse.Narayana Paraksarge Nakutaschana Bibiti Svarga Apavarga Narakeshu Apitulyarta Darshanam. He's in such an elevated state, he doesn't see any difference at all between heaven or hell or liberation.So we can take it from his statement that first there wasn't an offense and second there wasn't a reaction. But some plan of the Lord, inexplicable plan of the Lord.
So we
understand that Mother Durga was inspired by the Lord.
Yeah.
So we can understand Durga 母亲的话呢，她是在主的激励之下，或者主的指引之下而说出这个话。
Now, from what we've just heard about offenses to a devotee,
那么从我们刚才所聆听到的关于对奉献者的冒犯的
Durga should find Chitraketu and go to seek his forgiveness for her offending him.Even if it was inspired by Krishna. That's the teaching that we've received in any case. There's no description of what Parvati did after hearing from Lord Shiva.So we don't know what she did. But we know what she should have done. Because he was a great devotee. And she offended him. Sadhu Ninda, the first offense. Something more, Maharaj?
Well, these incidents seem to be there in many places in the Bhagavatam.
Yes.
Cursing Chitraketu also is a similar thing.
Agastya Muni.
Jain Vijay.
Jain Vijay.
Yeah. So I was wondering.Somebody asked me that, and I wasn't sure exactly it is some offense on their part. They should do something, really.
They should do something. With the Jayan Vijay narration from Canto 7,Prabhupada goes back and forth and back and forth saying no offense, offense, no offense, offense. Take your pick. We don't hear the four Kumaras going to Jayan Vijay and seeking their forgiveness.
我们也没有就是没有听过或就是说
But surely that was inspired directly. Just as it says here. Like the son of the sage who cursed Maharaj Parikshit. Now in that case, Maharaj Parikshit did something very bad. But the sage said, it was bad, but it wasn't, he should be killed because of it. Anyway, these things are very complicated. The important lesson for us is do not offend a saintly person. Don't think that you're so advanced, it's okay. Don't think they're so advanced, surely they'll forgive, I don't have to say anything. Offense is something very real and can block our spiritual progress. Anything else? Bangladesh. Yes. Yes.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, it's mentioned about Nimi, Maharaj Nimi, and he said his spiritual master has to do some sacrifice for others, but at the same because he's doing for others and neglects the sacrifice for Nimi, Maharaj Nimi. So he cursed his spiritual master, and his spiritual master also cursed him, Maharaj Nimi. So my question is that, of course, as a disciple, I won't dare to curse my spiritual master. But how to understand that Maharaj Nimi will even dare to curse his spiritual master?
This is in the category of Maha Aparad.
This is Maha Aparad. Maha
In the 10 offenses, one of them is sadhu ninda. There's another one called guru avagya. Avagya means neglect. So if the spiritual master gives some instruction, and I neglect to carry out the instructions, that's an offense. The other is much higher. The sadhu ninda is, I speak something harsh, I act with malice, with ill intent of wanting to hurt the person. It's much more serious. At least, you know, the action is much more serious. Now, there are scriptural examples and teachings where instructions are to be neglected, and there's no offense.
呢也会讲到，就是说有一些有一些就是说训示如果去忽略这个训示的话呢，是不计为是冒犯的。
One such example is found where Bhishma neglects the instruction of Lord Parashuram.
那么其中一个例子呢，就是 Bhishma 他忽略了主 Parashuram 的训示。
Now our new people are completely lost.
在这里呢，我们的新朋友就完全的不懂，听不懂了。
But that's okay.
但也没问题。
You can read that section in Mahabharata.
你可以在 Mahabharata 当中去专门读那一部分。
Parashuram instructed or gave teachings to Bhishma on military skill. He was his guru with regard to military science. So Parashuram ordered, Bhishma, either you marry Amba or fight me. And Bhishma said, well, there are three causes where one may not accept the instruction of his spiritual master. And when the spiritual master gives some instruction against the codes of the Vedas, the disciple may neglect that instruction. I'm a Kshatriya, I've taken a vow that I'll not marry. And you're instructing me to marry. I can't break my vow. So let's fight. And when Bali Maharaj disobeys the instruction of Shukracharya, there's another example. So there are scriptural grounds for disobeying the instructions of a teacher or guru. And that's a whole other level than criticizing or vilifying. With malice and wishing to harm the other person. Yes. Say it in Chinese.
If someone who unconsciously say something or do something that make other devotees feel offended or hurt, so in this kind of scenario, if this counts as offense or not?
It depends.
这是要因情况而定的。
I'll speak just on a personal level. I have been in circumstances where I have said something, another person misunderstood the something that I said and took offense, and I went and apologized to them, although it was just a misunderstanding of what I said and what I intended. We could take a different approach than that one.
当然
we could simply go and clarify the misunderstanding and make it a right understanding. Or it could, you know, get nastier, and we can go and say, "Why have you misunderstood me? You're always getting things wrong." What's wrong with you? Those things happen. But I find it's much nicer, and it's even very natural. If someone is feeling hurt because of my existence, I want to apologize that my existence is making them feeling hurt, even though it's due to a misunderstanding. And I'll take it one step further. That's not appropriate only for very advanced devotees. Or only appropriate for peers and advanced devotees. But it's also appropriate for the general devotees. That's our Vaishnava culture. Rupa Goswami went and apologized to a Brahmana who misunderstood his laughter, thinking he was laughing at him. You know the story. And that's Rupa Goswami, the one that we're following. Alright? Okay. Chambavati and then Donna Kelly.
Narthani
Virti
many lifetimes we have gone away from Krishna trying to enjoy independently from Him? And now we have to pay the price for all of that. It's miles and miles and miles of impurity covering and caking our heart. So keep scrubbing.
Thank you.
meeting, they have very close relationship with them. When they really open their heart to each other, sometimes devotee will reveal that something happened to them which is unfair, and when the listener or when I hear it, then you really want to fight for the righteous, for them.
The right, yeah.
Yeah, right for them. So in this kind of situation, what should we do? What is the proper mentality to deal with that?
Yes. Translate that part. Okay, you ready? Step back, pause.
往后退一步, 停下,
mode of goodness.
善良心态,
don't be judging.
不要去判断,
be a servant.
成为一个仆人,
servant of Krishna, servant of this Prabhu, and servant whoever the other person is. Don't take sides. In the mood of service, reflect. How can I be of service to these individuals and Krishna in the best way? Resist being a judge. This one's right, that one's wrong. Assume that, as is always the case, there's another side to the story. And probably a few others besides two sides to the story. And again, think in service to Krishna and these nice Prabhus, how can I be best of service to them? That's my answer to your question. Because the detail depends on the circumstances, the details of the circumstance. What you do depends on the details of the circumstance. Maybe you don't know what's the best service position for you to take in assisting these Prabhus. So, I'm not done yet. She wants to say something more. You can express, it's called reflective listening, says like this. So, you're feeling like this. And they go, yeah, I'm feeling like this. And you're understanding this person has done something wrong like that. So it's causing you some pain, right? You're not taking sides, you're just reflecting what they said to you. So that person will feel understood. Doesn't mean they're right or wrong. It's just you, whatever it is that they're feeling, you've understood it, you received it. And then you can start asking some questions. Like, what were you thinking to do because of that? What options have you considered? And then you can assist them going through, you know, however many options they thought of, rule some of them out, they got some left, and okay, so you seem to resonate more with these options. Best if you can encourage that person to go speak to the other person. And when they speak to the other person, encourage them to leave like a blank slate.
Blank slate
means, like Sanatana Goswami came before Lord Chaitanya with a blank slate, meaning, you know, this happened, this is what I felt, you probably have a different perspective of what happened, and you probably also had some feelings. Could you share that with me? But there could be other options depending upon the circumstances, so it's so hard to say. But if you are at least in the mode of goodness as opposed to judgmental, and a little higher if your mood of humble service is operating, and far more likely that Krishna will give you the intelligence, or you'll have the receivers on to receive intelligence from Krishna how to help the situation best. We have 11 minutes left. You want to say something more? Okay. Preeti Vardhan, you had your hand up? Could you speak? Give her the microphone. We've talked about this before. Yeah?
Just now what you mentioned about communication, and what I talk about is the cooperation in service, so they are different.
No. You and Gopi Priya and I have discussed this topic before. I'm sure she remembers. I'm sure I remember. One of the three of us isn't remembering. I'll give a short answer. Two parts. One, mode of goodness. Second one. Be an example of that which you would like others to be. I want to see cooperation amongst the devotees. How come they're not cooperating with me? It's a classic. Here's another option. I want to see cooperation with devotees. Let me see how I can cooperate with them. I'll extend myself in ways that are important to them. What happens? If someone's heart is a little soft, their heart will soften more. But if I'm operating in the mode of passion where my idea is the idea that everyone should follow, please cooperate. People are going to step back and say, well, I'm getting out of the way of this person. So I recommend cultivation of the quality of goodness. Do you remember that discussion? And your greatest well-wishers in Krishna consciousness are wishing that for you. Enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness is such a valuable asset, which you have abundant enthusiasm. Patience in the mode of goodness is another very valuable asset in Krishna consciousness. Patience and the mode of goodness. So invest in that one for a bit. It will make a very nice compliment to your abundant enthusiasm. You'll be far more peaceful. That mood will foster the mood of cooperation far more. And Krishna will smile. One or two more questions. Yes, you're very enthusiastic to ask a question.
Thank you.
I don't know what their standards are in Mayapur, so I can't say. It doesn't sound like an offense. But they may have some kind of standard. Maybe it doesn't fall in the category of offense, but it's not what their standard is, so please don't do it, kind of thing. Mayapur is a funny place. Well, I don't know if it's. I mean, in Mayapur, they do not allow women to do deity worship. There may be some rule that not only no women do deity worship, but no women on the altar area. I don't know. So without knowing the detail, I can't say whether it was, you know, a rule or an offense that they have. I don't even know what it is, so I can't say. So it's that time. It's 2 o'clock. And Sandini didn't come to the door yet and point to her watch. So before she comes, let's go take prasadam. Haribol!